DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Those people are the freaks, man.
Price.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Big Jim.
I told you. What did I tell you? Didn't I tell you? Because I told you.
Samantha.
I am going to have regular sex with you whether you like it or not.
Not another podcast.
Stay away from politics.
Good call, because honestly, I could give a fat roasty shit.
Yeah, I'm fucking. I've had enough for a week, and
you know you got it bad when Larry Flint, Mr. Hustler Magazine, has offered a $10 million reward for evidence towards Trump's impeachment. So if you want $10 million and you have evidence that would,
does it have to be genuine evidence?
Yes, it does.
Shit.
No fake news.
Because I can come up with lots.
But yeah, I guess I heard it on the radio today that he's offered up $10 million to anyone who can provide substantial enough evidence to get him impeached. And if it leads to an impeaching, $10 million is yours. Hustler Magazine will.
So you can actually provide the evidence. And by the way, this is all on the show right now. Mm. I know we didn't actually start. this is actually... too good.
Welcome to Not Another Conversation.
So you come up with evidence, but if it doesn't lead to an impeachment, you're shit out of luck.
Yep.
Even if it's like photos of Trump with Russian people and signed contracts and everything. But
the caveat is it needs to lead to his impeachment and successful impeachment at that, is what I'm understanding.
That just...
However, if you manage to hit it, I mean, fuck your aces. You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, but you gotta, I mean, things have really gotta go your way.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah, I was at my in-laws yesterday, and actually, that's a good question to ask.
Hmm.
You and your wife have been married 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be all right going to her folks' house and just walking in the door if she wasn't there?
If my wife wasn't there,
yeah.
Or if my in-laws weren't there?
No, if your in-laws were there, but your wife wasn't.
See, I'll be honest with you. It's kind of weird because, quite frankly, I mean, my in-laws are not necessarily the greatest people in the world. Now, however, I will clarify on this. My wife doesn't know her father, so that's out of the equation. It would be just her mother. However, her grandmother... and her uncle live together, and yeah, they'd be totally fine with me just stopping by and saying, hi, how's it going? That being said, her mom, probably not, but I wouldn't have any reason to go over there, ever. Flip the script on that. Yeah, my parents wouldn't give a fat roasty shit if my wife showed up and just be like, hey, how you doing?
I was at my in-laws yesterday, and we were discussing, you know, comfort levels and stuff, and I've been married to my wife 10 years now. My brother-in-law and his wife have been married 8 years now, but they've been together like a really long time.
Yeah, Bryce and I were very much on the same page about things.
It came up that a few years ago, this maybe 3-4 years ago, his wife and I were coming to the house. It was a holiday. I think it was like Thanksgiving. We both had to go out to our cars, and we were coming back in, and she looked at me, and she goes, Will you ever feel comfortable just walking in here?
Ah.
And I was like, no. And I mentioned that to my in-laws yesterday, and they were like, you know, you are. I was like, I know I am, but it's a comfort level, and they totally got it. I mean, they're totally cool people and everything. But it was like, and they told me that even now, they've been married like 40 years, something like that. They're still not comfortable going into their in-laws without knocking. So it's an interesting dynamic, and I was thinking about it, and you're one of the few other people I know who's married.
Aye, and for me, it's...
I was just wondering if it's just me, or if it's just if that's like a general...
It's just you.
Thing. No. Well, probably.
No, the thing about it is I understand where you're coming from with it. However, if like in your situation where, you know, if my wife and I had to go out to the car and I finished whatever the hell I was doing and I was walking in first, knowing that she would be there with me, I wouldn't have a problem meeting her inside.
Mm-hmm.
Especially considering the fact that they already knew we were there. I don't really have an issue with that.
Well, see, that's one thing, but I'm talking just, like, going over there. Like, say you're going over there to pick up something and your wife isn't there. They know you're coming, but you still knock, right?
Well,
you don't just walk in. See,
I'm okay with knocking, just kind of give them forewarning, but I do that almost everywhere. I mean, it's like when I go to my mother's house, you know, if I don't see her outside, which is rare in and of itself, yeah, I'll still knock on the door before I open it. I mean, still my mother, but at the same time, I still knock.
Well, yeah, we didn't get to that part of that conversation, but even, like, I still knock on my own mother's door.
Yeah.
Even if she's expecting us and everything, it's still...
It's kind of a courtesy thing.
I think so, too, but it's also a comfort, because...
It's announcing yourself.
My wife, she'll just walk in the door at her folks' house. I think Bryce is the same way.
Probably.
I think... Generally, that's kind of like, if it's your folks, I mean...
It's kind of okay, just by default, but...
My mother raised me right, and it's polite to knock.
See, and that's
apparently
my
wife is a heathen.
That's my thing about it. It's more than just a comfort level. It's a standard practice. You know, it's just a courtesy. It's something to kind of be expected. Because, honestly, it's like when people come over to my place... Not that they do very often, but when they do, I appreciate when they knock first. Even though I know they're coming, it's kind of like a, oh, they're here, cool. And it's not just them, hey, how you doing, walking through the door. It's like, well...
Hey, how you doing? Oh, you're not wearing pants. Okay.
Right? And there have been times where it's been a close call, where it's like, had my friends not knocked, well, they'd have seen me in my whiteies, and I'm pretty sure they would not have appreciated that. So it was just one of those things where, you know, when people knock... It's like, oh, crap, can you go grab that, sweetheart? I got to go get changed real quick, you know, or whatever it may be. It's kind of just that nice little 10-second warning of they're here.
Yeah.
And, you know, more so to the point, I think if everybody I know knows to knock, it's the person who barges in my house that I have to worry about.
Yeah. My friends and family are all welcome, you know, when we reach that level of comfort to, you know, come on in,
right?
But everyone knocks first, and I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it is kind of a nice little warning of like, hey, we're here, please, you know, have clothes on,
right?
You know, so yeah, it was interesting. It just kind of like, because they were talking about, you know, my sister-in-law and how, you know, motherhood is changing her and stuff, and it was like, and it just got on this conversation about comfort level. And you know, I've been married to my wife 10 years, and I'm still not comfortable.
Go team.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a challenge, though, dude. I mean, for people who know what it's like to be married for double digits amounts of years, and even, you know, 5 years is quite a bit for a lot of folks. I mean, shit, it's more than some can handle. Being married, though, I mean, for me, is super fucking easy because... My wife has been and probably will continue to be my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And a best friend that I've had since middle school. So it's like, there's no unknowns between us. So I don't ever have to worry about her. It's like, she doesn't have to worry about me. You know, we can go out.
She should worry about you.
She should. But, no, it's nice, though, because it's like, you know, whenever she's going out with her friend Jennifer, I don't even question it. It's like, well, yeah, she's out with her friend.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a call when you're on your way home, you know. But other than that, there is a heightened level of trust that I don't have to worry about. And I even told my wife, it's like, you're stuck with me, sweetheart, because quite frankly, I have no game. So if you left me, I'd probably just end up being single.
Yeah, as would I.
Just because there's so much time invested in our relationship that I'm just not willing to put in that kind of work to anybody else.
It's... You know, it's one of those things that I think about, and especially today, after we had an incident, because I'm going to cut out the beginning part.
Right. the world don't need to know.
Yeah. It's something I've thought about. Should the worst happen, what would happen? Like, how would I deal with that? You know? And I'm okay being on my own. Like, before my wife, it was 10 years, roughly, before I dated anyone.
Oh.
And a lot of it was because I had no game. Like, none.
Yeah.
And a lot of that had to do with my own self-worth, self-doubt, self-confidence.
All right.
So anytime I met someone, it was complete overcompensation, and that just drove them away.
Right.
You know? So what really took it to, like, land the girl who eventually became my wife was me focusing on other things. Like, I really had to, like, stop and go, look, this whole dating thing is not happening.
Right.
And it's never going to happen with the way things are with me. So you need to forget about that aspect of your life and focus on what is happening, which at the time was, you know, my career was just starting up.
Right.
So I just spent a couple years just wholly dedicated to that. And then after five years into it, like, I started meeting people and started dating.
Right.
You know, and then eventually my wife and I kind of, our circles came back together because we were in college together.
Right. You told me about that.
Yeah, our circles came back together and timing was right and it just, you know, happened. So dating, I don't even understand dating now.
See, and that's the thing. I don't either. I know that. Me personally, it's like...
Samantha's going to hear this and really wish she was on the show.
Well, you know, the thing about it is like, me personally, I know that meeting somebody new wouldn't be a task so much as me wanting to invest a personal stake in somebody would mm-hmm. be my issue, because it's like, you know, for me, let's put it this way. I'm about to turn 32 here in a couple of weeks, and that marks a point in my life where I have damn near known my wife and have either been best friends with or have been, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend for just about half of my life. Now, you consider that in a time span, that's almost 15, upwards of 16 years. I've known this woman, I have been with her, I have, you know, gone through relationship troubles, and we worked through it, we got back, you know, everything was cool, and now we're at this point where we understand each other so well that there's just nothing else. And my thought process is, with a good-hearted relationship, I would need somebody who is as receptive to who I am as mm-hmm. I would be to them. And there would have to be a level of trust that would be immeasurable. And unfortunately, that's really fucking hard to come by. I mean, there's a reason people say it's one in a million chance, because this shit just doesn't happen.
See, I wonder if that's true the older you get, because... by the time you reach your 30s, or even into your 40s, people have gone through so much that they might be far more receptive to who you are.
True.
Because they've gone through, you know, in some cases a marriage or even two marriages, and, you know, they have a better understanding of people in general.
And that's fair. I would say that you're on to something there, but at the same time, for me, it's the coolest part about my setup as it is I never had to pretend to be anything other than what I was.
And you shouldn't have to.
And that was the beauty part. I never had to really put on airs. I never had to, you know, change my way of my personality to accommodate for somebody else, because we started out as friends.
Mm-hmm.
Very close friends. And I always had wanted something more. And mind you, I met her in 7th grade and we started dating by the end of 7th grade. But it was still a matter of, I could just be me all the time.
Yeah.
And she liked that about me, and she liked who I was, and so I didn't have to worry about it. I basically got to put myself forward as, this is who I am, this is what I am, this is what I do, and she just clicked. My problem is I don't ever have a problem meeting people, I don't ever have a problem getting along with people, but I don't know. It always strikes me as I would probably, at this point in my life, get locked into a friend zone.
No, I honestly think I'm right there with you, because again, it's for me, it would, number one would be meeting someone, and number two, not scaring them off with, you know, that sort of overcompensation of myself, because I have, even after being married 10 years and everything that I do, and I should be a lot more confident than I am with everything. So my tendency to overcompensate really, you know, scares people off. I think it's just I don't have a comfort level with myself.
That's fair.
You know, I've gotten a lot better in the last, you know, 20 some odd years, but still, like, it's one of those things where, again, should the worst happen and I decided that it was okay to date again. Number one, where would you go to meet people?
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough.
You really got to pick your ponies at that point.
Yeah, because it's like, do you go to bars? No. Yeah. Bars is not, you know, at my age, definitely not.
That's
bars,
what Tinder's for. No.
That's where you meet a one-night stand. No, but it's... You've got to take into account if you are dating at an older age, bars is not the thing. Bars are for 20-somethings.
And on top of that, I've never been a bar guy.
No, neither have I.
It's not somewhere I like to go. If I want to get shit-faced, I want to, like I told my wife a long time ago, if I'm going to get shit-faced, I want to do it at home so I can throw up in my toilet, which I know I clean, or she cleans, and I want to pass out on my bed.
Yeah.
Or on my floor. Whichever one happens first, you know. But I will wake up the next morning somewhere where I am comfortable, and I won't have to drive anywhere.
Yeah.
Or rely on a ride, or pay for a cab. It's like...
Or puke in a friend's car.
Right? That's just not cool. But at the same time, it's like, bars have never been my scene. Strip clubs, it's one of those things.
You're not going to meet someone at a strip club.
Oh, you could. I've been told many a things, especially from our good buddy Dan, but at the same time...
You're just going to call him out and throw him under the bus, aren't you?
Just right under that fucking bus. The thing about it is, though, is you got to consider the caliber of person you're going to meet.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, you could try to pick up chicks in the library, but Lord knows they're probably 100 times smarter than you and want nothing to do with you in the first place. You know, you could try the online dating thing, which is really rolling the dice on that one.
It really is. I would say more so than, you know, one in a million chance.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know my brother, he met his wife of 10 years on a dating site.
Well,
And she very nearly did not want to go out with him when she found out he was a drummer.
Wah, wah.
But she did, and they've been happy ever since. And so, I mean, but that's the exception that proves the rule.
Right.
You know, I mean, you have no idea, you know. And there's so much dishonesty on dating sites anyway.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's another thing, too. It's like, I think the nicest part for me is I really didn't have to roll the dice. I knew exactly what I was getting into with who I got into it with. And for that reason, it made it so much easier to be happy and to stay consistently happy. Because, again, there was no guesswork. I mean, all of her past, or 90% of it, I'll say, I'm more than aware of, you know, and none of it was even close to a deal breaker. I mean, in all the things we've gone through in these past 7-8 years, nothing really changes how I feel. It just adds a new level of day-to-day concern.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, nothing really changed at all. And I still feel the same way about her now that I did 6 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago. Because she's still the same person. Although how she has evolved as a person, I have evolved with. And we just kind of did it naturally, so we don't really notice it as a big difference. I'm sure if we talk to our, you know, 13, 12 year old selves, I'm sure we're kind of polarized different, but at our core we're identical. I mean, the same goofy shit we laughed about back then, we still laugh about now. Dumb and Dumber is still one of our favorite movies. And it's mostly because of, you know, Harry's pooping scene. Because that scene, just that was actually one of the things that bonded us, was my buddy Drew and I, when we were in elementary school, every single morning his mom would drop him over at my house. He would come in, wake me up, I'd get up, get dressed, get changed, and we'd meet up in the living room, pop the VHS of Dumb and Dumber in, watch the first half of it, go to school, come back to my house after school, and watch the last half. If we still had enough time, we'd rewind that motherfucker and watch it all again. And we did that for almost a solid year. So by the time we hit middle school, that shit was memorized. Front, back, backwards and forwards. We knew every cue, every marker, everything. So when we met my wife in seventh grade, I was hanging out with this guy named Josh and my buddy Drew and a couple of our other friends that were in the grade ahead of us. And Drew and I, we would just go off on Dumb and Dumber quotes. And it used to crack my wife up something fierce. Just made her laugh her ass off because she fucking loved that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so we automatically bonded over, you know, getting giggles and laughs. And so even now, it's like if a good fart joke comes over, she'll laugh because it's fucking funny. And that's the nice thing about it. You know, goofiness and silliness is definitely where we bond. So no matter what kind of day is going on, no matter how shitty the day is going, if I can quote something funny, I can make her smile. I can make her laugh, which is something I try to do every day. Not because I feel it's a requirement or anything like that. It's more so it's just something I enjoy.
Yeah. My
life
with
is
my
better
wife.
When she's happy.
Yeah. I think that's the general rule. A husband's life is much better when wife is happy.
Yeah, and even, you know, when times are tough and things are looking bad, I mean, my viewpoint of what it meant to be a good husband was to be the strength when needed, and then to try to present a different way of seeing things. So if things are looking really shitty, need to be the strength to back that up and say, you know what, it's going to be okay. Make them laugh. They'll stop worrying about it at the time, especially if it's something that can't really be helped. You just got to try to find a way to go, you know what, it's going to be okay, and, you know, just quote something stupid. Just to make them laugh and go, okay. And then vice versa, you know, the nice part about it is when I was really down and out, she tries really hard to make me laugh. I think my problem for me personally is when I've hit my dark space, it damn near takes the jaws of life to make me see different.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I try to be a very insightful person and I try to have retrospect and introspect and all those different specs, it's really hard to see the forest for the trees when you're in a dark place. My wife tries very hard to do the exact same thing for me. And I think for me, I've been a self-proclaimed rock for so long that when I start to crack, I feel like there's nothing that could fix it.
Mm.
But she does really well to try to keep at it and just try to keep me happy and try to keep me distracted, you know, or keep me thinking about something else. And that's how we work so well together, is she's got my back when I'm down, and I've always got her back when she's down. And then when we're up, we don't notice it because we're just having a ball. I mean, we just think about the things we've done and the things we're planning to do, like our trips we've taken. Always a nice shining, yay, and then I'm instant, aw, I'm going to go back. And that's one of the big things that we run into. But, I mean, for the most part, that's how I feel a good, healthy relationship should operate. And to be able to find somebody who could share that type of kinship in the worst case scenario. And again, I've been forbade from, you know, dating if it does happen, but, you know, we'll see. but it's one of those things where it's like to find somebody who understands the nature of what I feel is a healthy relationship and what is proven to me to be a healthy relationship, it'd be very hard for me to trust someone that much in that respect, because I don't know. The stars would definitely have to line up for me in that idea. Because I honestly feel like when I do go to my deathbed, I will die knowing that I had something that hundreds of thousands of people have sought their entire lives and never gotten. And for that, I feel internally grateful.
I think for myself, I've always kind of known the type of relationship that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very fortunate in that I have that now. But the reason is because growing up, I saw every relationship my mother had. I just saw everything I didn't want growing up. So when I started dating, I already knew what I wanted.
You had a standard of excellence already set out. Yeah.
And came close a few times. But that also left me open to be cheated on repeatedly. Because I was naively optimistic with some of the choices I made.
Yeah. But and, you kind of have to be, though.
Well, after the third time, it really cuts you and makes you jaded and then leaves you questioning everything. And that's where my low self-esteem comes from, you know.
Why?
When it happens repeatedly, like once is an anomaly, twice, you know, maybe. Yeah, but maybe after the third time, it's like, maybe it's me. Maybe it's something I'm putting out there.
And that could very well be. It's a good perspective to have. However, I would think, albeit a good perspective, and not something to dwell upon. Because you got to remember one golden rule that I've come to understand, and this is from years and years of watching Maury Povich. When somebody cheats on someone they supposedly love, 99.9% of the time has nothing to do with the person who got cheated on. Has everything to do with the person who did the cheating. Because it takes one hell of a personality to be able to say, alright, I'm in a relationship with somebody who cares about me, who gives a shit about me. Oh look, somebody really hot. I'm going to break every rule of this relationship so I can go hit that and assume no consequences. Because when somebody makes that big of a leap, knowing full well that cheating on somebody they're with is something that they shouldn't be doing in the first place, to me that strikes me as a conscious decision that they were well aware of and chose to ignore. So that, to me, never falls on the cheated, but the cheater. Because that's a conscious decision. Now, if you're drugged and a black bag's put over your head and someone has sex with you while you're unconscious after they threw a fight or a blue pill down your throat.
That's a completely different thing.
Exactly. That's a completely different thing. But cheating on someone is a clear-minded choice. Now, mind you, I've been shit-hammered drunk many a times in my life. Never once have I ever even considered the idea of going after somebody else. And that my most inebriated still had the common knowledge to go, you're trying to hit on me, I need to go sit over here. Because it's not that hard to see the signs. And like I said, it takes a certain type of person to go, alright, fuck yeah, what's up, baby? And it's like, even when you're shitty drunk, a person who's willing to break that rule was gonna break it sober. Because it's already a thought they had in their head, already a preconception they'd thought about, given credence to, and being drunk was just an excuse for them.
Yeah.
And so for that, again, it's not a bad insight to have, but at the same time, all of that was on them. All of it. Every last little bit of it was on them. Now, you know, you got these situations where like women will cheat on their husbands because their husband works too much. It's like, okay, you're lonely. I get that. But that's what you have friends for. Friends are there for that reason. To be someone around to hang out with, to talk with. You never have to break that boundary rule ever. And get all the benefits here. And then once, you know, if you're in a shit relationship anyway, I mean, obviously you should break it off and then move on.
Yeah.
But...
Well, that's always been my rule. And again, from the time I started dating, it was always, if I ever feel that if I'm with someone and I feel the urge to cheat, it tells me something is wrong with my relationship that either needs to be fixed or
needs to be moved on.
Because clearly it's not working.
Exactly.
And that's served me well. It's happened a couple of times where things, but in my defense, things were falling apart very clearly, and someone else would start paying attention to me, and it would, for me, it would be like, okay, hold that thought.
Right.
I have to take care of some shit over here.
Right. Because you have that conscious decision to go, okay, this is not working where I'm at. I need to move on, and I have a potential outlet here. It needs to be explored, but it needs to be done in the right way.
Yeah. It's a respect thing for me.
Exactly.
You know, and I just feel like, and it doesn't change the fact, though, that when you're cheated on, even though it's not your fault, you still feel like shit.
Oh, yeah.
And you're constantly questioning, what could I have done? What could I have done differently?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I dated this girl. I moved from the coast to Portland for this girl.
Mm-hmm.
We dated 2 years. And on my birthday,
aww.
On my birthday, she called me up after ignoring me all day. She'd gone to some concert or something. She called me up and said, I think we should see other people. What I found out later was she had spent the whole day with, you're going to love this, a guy who looked almost exactly like me.
James Robinson, 2.0.
It was one of the worst.
It wasn't your looks that she didn't like. You know?
Apparently. It came down to, I never really talked to her about it. And we've spoken 3-4 times.
Gotcha.
Since we broke up. I have almost no interest in her. I'm friends with her sister on Facebook, so I kind of, you know, can kind of keep up with the family, because her family was great. Her sister was fantastic. They were, I consider them very close. And this was way back, like, my senior year in high school.
Right.
So, I mean, that's how much distance. But yeah, so she dumped me, and then I found out through mutual friends and things that she had basically said on the day when she met this guy that she was only with me until she found someone better. Oh, after 2 years together. It was a real just kick in the teeth, and the breakup was really bad, because there was a whole bunch of drama. I went over the next day after all this, and I basically said, look, I don't like this whole seeing other people while we're still together kind of thing. So it's got to be either or.
Right.
And she basically said, well, it's going to be or. And I was like, okay. You know, just totally like, hey, rip my heart out, stomp on it, set it on fire. And, you know, so I get up to leave. I'm like, there's nothing more to say at this point. So she gets up and she hugs me and then tries to kiss me. I'm like, what are you doing? We just broke up.
Right.
Clearly, she had never broken up with someone before.
This is new.
So, and then my stepfather, who was real close with them, went over and talked to her about it all. And she was like, I guess she was kind of remorseful about the whole thing. And it was like, what she didn't realize at the time when she broke up with me was she was losing a lot more than just me.
Right.
And it kind of hit her pretty hard, from what I understand. And also from what I understand, that cycle continued throughout her life. She did not make really good choices in the men that she was with after that. I don't know if that's true or not. It's all circumstance, you know, third party.
It's all hearsay.
Yeah, exactly. So I honestly, I hope that she's happy wherever she is and everything. But at the time, it was one of the worst things, and it was the hardest breakup I've ever had to get over. It took a really long time. Hi. It was like an entire year before I even considered starting dating again.
That's fair.
And I did really poorly at it.
Well, you see, and for me, it's like ever since elementary school, I was a diehard loyalist. I mean, my parents.
Oh, I am too. Yeah.
My parents got divorced when, let's see, I would have been in, second grade, I think, when the procedure
started. This is a show
started.
I really wish we had Jim on, because his right. dating stories are fucking fantastic.
Well, the thing about it was, though, is it's like I had a girlfriend in first grade. She's my very first girlfriend. Now, mind you, we didn't even start kissing until we were in, like, third grade. But I had pretty much that same girlfriend from first grade all the way up until about fourth grade. And the only reason we broke up was just because she had moved on somewhere else. You know, her family had up and moved. So we just kind of called it good. At the time, you know, you're in elementary school. Being boyfriend and girlfriend is not the status symbol that it holds. It's like we hung out on recess and we saw each other after school and that was it. And then after that, you know, it was like from that point on, if I had a girlfriend, I would always try to stay as loyal as possible. Now, mind you, fifth grade was weird because I was asking out a bunch of girls who thought I looked like a goob.
That hasn't changed.
No. But the thing about it was is, you know, I had a couple opportunities in fourth and fifth grade with these really nice girls, but they were... I guess you would say they were out of my league, but what I always thought of them more as is they were the ones who were self-important and much more self-important than anybody else. And so it was a matter of, yeah, I got to call myself their boyfriend until they decided I couldn't, and that was it. And
well,
it was
that's
really nothing
fifth
else.
Grade,
so. Right, right. And so it's like when I went into sixth grade, I was single for that year, and then seventh grade... I met my wife, but I was actually dating another girl at the time, and I started to learn that there were things about women that I didn't like. One of my biggest pet peeves at the time was she treated her mother like shit. I mean, calling her a bitch and things like that, and it's like, really? Really? Okay.
But...
And so I stuck with that.
Play devil's advocate, though. Was her mother a bitch?
That's the thing. I got to meet her mother on multiple occasions. Her mother was nothing but supportive, helpful, and kind, and she just kind of took the abuse. So what I understood was that was really uncalled for.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason alone, I was like, okay, fuck this. So I let her break up with me because, honestly, I just stopped talking to her ass. Because this went on a couple of times. We went out on a couple of dates, you know, and things like that. And, God, she was just fucking horrible to her mother. And I was like, you know, I never cared for that. It's like, you know, my mother and father divorced when I was very young. I had every right in the world to be mad at one or both of them because of how the proceedings went down and all the bullshit that went down. I never held it against either one of them. I just knew that this was a shit situation and, you know, they were doing their best for us, but at the same time, they were doing their best for each other, themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And never once did I ever consider the idea of referring to my parents in such a manner. And so it's like, yeah, no, fuck that shit. And I told my wife this back in middle school, and she took it to heart that I didn't like women who ripped on their mothers. So for many years... all the way up until late high school, my wife had never said a horrible thing about her mother at all. Now, that being said, no person I have ever met in my entire life deserves to say more shit about their parents than my wife. I mean, it's like once she started breaking me into her history and her stories and things like that, she actually referenced back in seventh grade when I told Drew and Josie and all them how I didn't like that. And she goes, yeah, that's why I just never told you. I just never said anything. It's like, sweetheart, you have a right. She didn't.
Yeah.
There's a reason I didn't like that. You are completely justified in your bitterness and hatred you have. But it's... I don't know. That was just around the age, though, when I started to realize that there were certain things I didn't like about girls. And then it made me retrospect all the way back to elementary school and the things I didn't like about my girlfriends in fourth and fifth grade. And, again, not trying to circle around on a dead horse at this rate, but that was another big sell point for my now wife and then, at the time, best friend. It was one of those things where she was everything nobody else was, you know?
Mm.
And... to that, to me, was a rare feat. Actually, it was funny. After seventh grade year, we had finished the year off, and I went over to my buddy Drew's house, and I'm hanging out in his backyard with my buddy Josh, and we're just sitting around listening to Korn, because that's what you do. We had Mountain Dew and Funyuns, and we were just listening to Korn shooting BB guns. and we ended up just kind of hanging out, and we were talking, and I brought up the idea of asking Josie out. And they're like, well, yeah, dude, totally, go for it. Fuck yeah, man. She's awesome. I was like, yeah, she is, isn't she? So I called her up the next day, and I was like, hey, you want to just hang out? And so we met at the school because I figured that was a nice halfway point for her. She lived off of 82nd, and I lived off of 39th, and we went to Kellogg Middle School, which was on like 64th or something like that. Halfway point for her, a little further than I expected on my end. But I rode my bike. I got there pretty quick. And yeah, we just hung out, and right before we parted ways, I asked her, because I didn't know how to ask a girl out, really. I was poorly instructed as a kid. But I told her, I was like, well, do you want to go out with me? And the thing about it was, is she said, let me think about it. I was like, okay. And I rode off. And I was tickled sideways. I was like, I got something out of it. We're in good shape. I got home, and she called me up, and she said, yes, absolutely yes, let's do this. It wasn't until many years later she told me, as soon as I asked her that, the shock of it took her by surprise so much she didn't know what to say. And after she had said, let me think about it, and I rode off, she was like, stupid, 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 stupid. I was like, aw, that's cute. And that was just the thing, too. It's like, you know, when I proposed to her, I had this big, you know...
Did she say, let me think about it?
No. She was much more on it this time. The thing about it was, is I knew that she had an idea. I mean, I was terrible about keeping it to myself because I had already told everybody I know, and they were all giggly and shit, and I was not sly when I was trying to figure out a ring finger size. But it was one of those things where it's like I had this big plan where we were going to go up to my mom's house for Christmas. And I had bought this giant silver Hershey Kiss in plastic that had a little push button in the front of it. And when you pushed it, it would open up and sing a song like Kiss Me, Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me. There's a part of the song where it says, kiss me when you do, I know that you will miss me. Inside this thing, I had a bunch of Hershey Kisses surrounding the ring box that held the wedding ring. And I had that wrapped up in red plastic. You know, it looked like just a generic-ass gift. I had bought her a couple other things, too. But my plan was, is we were going to go up there, and my entire family knew about this. So my entire family showed up for Christmas up at my mom's house. I mean, my grandparents, my uncles, my aunts, all that shit. And it was, well, I mean, we do that fairly regularly. Our family does big events for the most part. And I had this big planned out and everything like that. And I went over to her house. I was living with my buddy Josh at the time in our first apartment. And mind you, this was a year after high school. The Christmas after high school, actually. And I went over to her place because she was still living with her mom, acting babysitter for her brothers. And I said, hey, you know, are we good to go, or are we ready to go? And she goes inside, and she was talking to her mom. She looked out the window and just started crying and just shook her head no. Oh, my God, I was so fucking mad. I was mad at her mother most of anything because she had an inkling, too. And she knew what I was intending, and that pissed me off so bad. Now, mind you, I was still riding a bike at the time, so I had to pedal my ass all the way home. Good aggression, you know, outlet. I had literally bent my handlebars downward. I had pedaled so fast I managed to make a 25-minute trip in about 10 minutes, cutting across traffic, all kinds of shit. Got back to the house and broke down. And I was talking to my mom. I was like, I don't know what the fuck we're going to do. I don't know what we're going to do. And she's like, don't worry about it. I got an idea. I was like, okay, what are we doing? And so my mom had basically told me, she was like, okay, so what we'll do is, you know, you'll come up here for Christmas, we'll do our thing just like normal, and then we'll go back into town the day after Christmas, take her out to breakfast, and we'll figure something out from there. It's like, all right, that's doable, that's fine, we'll figure something out. And we ended up going to IHOP off of 82nd, just between like Woodstock and Foster, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, we took her out to IHOP, and we were all sitting at the big table. My whole fucking family came down for breakfast. And so we're exchanging gifts, you know, and we're open and stuff. Like, yeah, this is really cool. Thank you so much. And I gave her that one, and she opens it up, and she hit the button. And it sang, and she just kind of looked at it for a second. And I was like, okay.
Do you get it?
It's going in a good direction. So at that point, I dropped down to a knee, and I asked her to marry me right there in IHOP. And, you know, no pressure.
No, none.
Surrounded by a bunch of strange-ass people and my entire family. but no, and she said
tell
yes.
Tell me breakfast
and,
was comped.
No. No, it wasn't. Should have been, but no.
IHOP. No romance in their hearts.
You IHOP. That's right. I'm calling you out. But no, it was just one of those things. And again, I guess I had caught her by surprise. She knew I was going to, but she didn't know how. And on top of that, she was very impressed with the ring I had selected. Because I didn't want to get her just, you know, the marquee or anything like that. I was like, no, I want to find something cool. And so I found something that I could actually afford. Which, working at Jiffy Lube at the time, had I been better with my money, probably could have afforded a decent amount. My rent was literally $300, and I only had to pay for electricity. Was riding my bike everywhere, so all my money got blown on movies and food. And
stupid
cigarettes.
Food.
Right. But it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, no, I found this really nice ring, and I was really happy about it. And she goes, yeah, when I first saw it, I was actually awestruck. And she goes, I didn't really expect you to get me something that nice. She was like, I was expecting, like, the fucking princess cut, you know, just the single rock in the middle of the straight band. It's like, yeah, no, that's not how I roll. But, I mean, it was nice for me because, again, that was another sign that not only could I constantly impress this woman, but I could surprise her once in a while, even when she knew something was coming. Which has just kind of been my go-to for much of everything we do. When it comes to birthdays and stuff like that, I always do everything I can to make it special. Whether it's, you know, if we're broke, I'll drive her somewhere really cool and we'll have a nice picnic or something like that. I will put in maximum effort to make her know that this was a special day. And very important to me, because if it didn't happen, she wouldn't be there. You know, and I think that's one of the things that some relationships nowadays, especially the ones that have rocky beginnings that they'd never work through, people don't seem to understand. You have to make every moment special. You have to make every day something significant. You have to try to make that day memorable, if only just for a small joke or a quip or a quote or something that you know gets a giggle out of them. It's important to make those special events because, like you and I understand, tomorrow is not guaranteed. And there are things in this world that could take this away from us. So I would say to anybody who listens to this, and anybody who's having a hard time, consider the following. If tomorrow doesn't come, are you happy with the job you have done at keeping your partner happy? Are you satisfied with the level of happiness you've brought to their life? Are you satisfied with the level of joy you've brought to their life? Whether it's just being you and being a goofball and making them laugh, or taking them out to dinner once in a while and just reminding them, you are special to me, and I want to do something special for you to show that. You don't have to do it in grand gestures all the time. It's nice, but a lot of the times, the simpler things make the difference. If you do the dishes when, you know, she was talking about doing them yesterday and just didn't get around to it. It's like, hey,
I did that today!
Right? See? But, I mean, just stupid stuff like that. It's like, you know, just cleaning the house and just organizing things and getting things back in shape. Something that we're all responsible for doing. But when they come home from work and they're tired and they see that you've already taken care of everything, that in and of itself is something that they'll appreciate. And just like we would appreciate it if it was done for us, same concept. So, I mean, the little things add up to a lot. But, again, if tomorrow isn't a guarantee, how content are you with the level of joy you've brought into that person's life? And that's why people down at work don't quite understand for me. They're always asking me, why aren't you working more overtime? It's like, because my time is precious. Every minute I get with my wife is precious. My weekends are sacred. My Saturdays, only day that I get solid 100% all attention on her. That to me is sacred beyond anything else. No amount of money will ever equate to that, because honestly, no person on their deathbed ever says, man, I wish I'd have worked more overtime. It's like, no. They wish they'd have lived more. They wish they'd have experienced more, loved more, you know, more of themselves put out there and enjoyed life for what it is. So when it comes around to monetary wealth and things like that, it's nice and it makes things easier at times. And it's something that makes times a little bit easier to get through when you're with somebody. However, it's not everything. I mean, you can be poor and broke, but happy. Or you can be rich as stink and miserable. I mean, it's how you play it. I mean, like right now, we make decent enough money to where our financial worries are there, but not consuming. Yeah, I mean, we got debts beyond reason, but we'll pay them when we have it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's the mentality we go through. It's not a stressful situation for us where we're constantly fighting over, oh, you spent fucking $10 for lunch. It's like, no, who fucking cares? It's 10 bucks. We have it, we don't. If we don't have it, I wouldn't have spent it. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I know good enough to know that I can't go blowing money, as I'm sure you're well aware. Same concept applies to most married men. We understand the nature of, if we have it and we get sanctioned, cool. Our wives probably won't go out and buy something unless it's sanctioned by us, if you have that level of trust. And, you know, I always tell my wife I don't really care. It's like, you want something, go get it. I don't care.
I'm the same with my wife.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm certain your wife is very much like mine in the respects, I don't need nothing.
Yeah.
It's like, man, you are impossible to Christmas shop for.
Oh my God, we just had this conversation. Give me a fucking clue, please.
Right? I got to go generic shit. It's like, I got to feed off of what hobbies I know she likes and what.
Oh, that doesn't even work for me.
It's like, oh,
Jesus. She spends all her time looking at things online, like on shopping stuff, but then when I'm like, I know you want stuff.
No, it's fine.
No, I'm good.
Ugh. God damn it.
And I can't even do the hobbies because her number one hobby is reading.
Yeah.
And she's got in her e-reader, she's got a virtual library. She will, entire lifetime, if she stopped work today and just read 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the rest of her life, she would not get through all the books she has.
Fuck.
Yeah, that makes it tough. And she's constantly getting more, so I'm like, I'm...
See, and my big issue...
Give me a clue!
Give me something.
Yeah. The only response is, that I get is, you know me, you know what I like.
Oh, I hate that.
If I did, I wouldn't be asking you right? What you want for Christmas.
It's like, I think, guys, we have a different mentality when it comes to shit we like. We're like, ooh, what?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Need it, want it, seen it, ooh, I want it. Because
I think I figured it out this year. She doesn't like this idea, but you know what? It's going to save me a whole headache. I know places she likes to shop.
I'm just gonna give cards.
A whole mess of gift cards to all the places she likes to shop. And I'm calling it good.
Right.
If she doesn't like it, then next year she can make me a fucking list of things she wants.
See, and the worst part was, I actually got my wife to make me a Christmas list once. Ever. I still have it.
Oh, God,
because there are things... Dude, seriously, I was like, for fuck's sake, give me like... I want your top 10. Give me top 10. Okay? You probably won't get 9 of them, but I'll do my best. And so she put stuff on there, a new mop, a new broom. I was like, this shit ain't funny.
This is not what you want for Christmas.
Yeah, I am not
doing this. This is things we need for the house.
Right? That was my thing. I was like, that's not funny. I'm not going to go to the store and like, oh, doing some household shopping? No.
No, it's Christmas shopping. I'm a terrible husband.
Right? It's like, for fuck's sake, I might as well get you an apron or something, for fuck's sake. I actually asked her for an apron, which apparently when a guy asks for home ec style stuff, it's funny and it's okay.
And you will get it.
Yeah, and I got my apron. Matter of fact, it's on my profile picture. I still have it.
I actually asked for measuring cups 1 year.
Nice.
And they're... you can see it. It's R2-D2.
Oh, nice.
My sister-in-law got those for me.
Well, again, it's easier for us to kind of list off the shit we want. The problem I know my wife has, and I feel for her, is within the last 7 or 8 years, the only things I've made known that I really want are way too fucking expensive. Mm. And it's not that I've been like, ooh, I need it. It's more like, damn, that'd be nice. But that's where it ends.
Yeah.
So when it comes around to birthday shopping or Christmas shopping or things like that, she knows that all the things that I've made apparent that I want, way too fucking expensive. I mean, like, the last thing she wanted to get me for my birthday, or, yeah, it was last year for my birthday, she saved up, I think it was $300, and said, go to Guitar Center. I was like, okay. Thank you, greatest birthday ever. Because it was. It was nice. It's like I managed to pick up my nylon acoustic that I can plug in, and I picked up my mic with my boom and everything, and it was really fucking cool. I had a great time sitting in there, and I was looking at all these different guitars and shit like that. It's like, ooh, I could has that. I could has that, too. It's like, ooh. But, you know, I had a purpose for going in there, but it was still, it's one of those things where she knows that I'd love to have an Explorer, but that's over $1,000. She knows that there are 2 or 3 Dime Series Deans that I would love to have. Those are over $1,000. Most of them, at least. And, you know, things like amps and stuff like that, she doesn't even know where to go. She just knows that I would like to have a full stack, which is well over $1,000. So it's one of those things where I told her, it's like, well, when we hit the lottery, I'm getting your extended Christmas list. And it better be long. Because, yeah, you already have mine, and most of my earthly desires could be met with probably $500,000. So if we won $10 million, yeah, we'd still have a lot of remainder.
Yeah. No, that's something. And, you know, it's always fun to dream about hitting the lottery.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife and I play the Powerball weekly.
Should switch over to Megabucks.
You never know.
Higher likelihood. Smaller jackpot, yeah, but higher likelihood.
You know what? That's actually true, because I guess most of the country does not do the Powerball. The reason Powerball winners are usually East Coast is because East Coast has more people playing it. I think Oregon is one of the only West Coast states involved in the Powerball.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Which is why it's so rare to get...
But Megabucks is Oregon's game.
Yeah.
So nobody outside of Oregon gets to play it. Again, it's only like $1.5 million, but I'm pretty sure we would find a way to spend it.
That's a house and paying off my bills.
Right? That was my thought. It's like debt gone,
debt
new
gone
house.
And a house, yeah.
And paid all the toys house I could dream of, because honestly, I could cut my list down to like $10,000. I'd be a happy, content boy. Mm. And that's with my car paid off and all the house paid off and all that other bullshit. It's like, yeah, if I got $1 million, I could satisfy just about every one of my piddly desires.
See, if I got $1 million, I probably wouldn't get... $1 million to me is debt paid off, which is not huge.
Right.
But it's debt paid off. It's money put away for retirement and things like that, and a house that's completely paid off.
Yeah, and then at that rate, all you have to do is property taxes every year.
Yeah, and at that point, that's $1.5 million pretty much gone. Because I'm putting a lot away for retirement.
And that's fair. And for me, I'm more on the page of $1 million would basically buy me a house, debt-free, and a shit ton of toys. And
yeah,
I'm talking about
toys
I don't have to worry about.
Because
it's like, and at that rate, too, I think I did the math once on it. I think to satisfy any of my desires at this point in my life, I can do 99% of them with $500,000. Because honestly, that's all of our debt gone. A $350,000 house, which is what they're fucking going for now. And still have enough to buy all my musical equipment I want. And set up whatever else I would like as far as like just generic toys. I mean, you think about a decent car, it's like $15,000.
Yeah.
Out of $1 million, that's pocket change. I mean, you're not even breaking $100,000.
However, remember though, you're not getting the full $1 million.
Well, that's the thing. It's
you're
like
probably getting 2/3 of it.
Well, with the jackpot like 1.5 or something like that, I always cut it down to $1 million after taxes and all that bullshit. So $1 million flat is what I have in my hand. I would still have like $400,000 stashed in the bank.
Yeah.
And that's just there. All my bills are squared. I'll still be working.
See, we always do the Powerball because
dream big.
Our dream is to, after we take care of ourselves, take care of the people that matter the most to us.
Aye.
So it's like buying a house for these friends, paying off these people's house, taking care of these people. You know, it's
and that's where I usually
the bigger
go.
The jackpot gets, the more it's like.
Well, duh.
We know we only need this much to take care of ourselves from now until the end of our lives.
Right.
You know, getting a house, paying off debt, setting aside money for the future. If we got this amount, we could retire and still take care of all of our friends.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And that's where, you know, the wife and I have always been. She really doesn't like the whole idea of, like, playing the lottery and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
She used to call it the stupid tax for the longest time. But what I explained to her is like, sweetheart, this is just a ticket to dream. That's all.
Yeah.
I'm buying the freedom to think about what if. And other than that...
Well, and the thing is what if will never happen if you don't play.
I mean, right, absolutely.
It's a sad thing.
Guaranteed, you know? No if you don't play. However, on the flip side of that, you know, we talked about the Powerball thing too.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very much the same in the respects that it's like if we hit that giant jackpot that's like, you know, $300 million or something like that. It's like, well, duh. Because you could do everything you've ever wanted throughout your entire life, still have $100 million stashed in the bank after the fact, and be able to take care of every single one of your family members, all the way down from nieces, nephews, grandchildren, grandparents. Oh, yeah. I mean, all the way up and down the list. You could take care of your best friends. You could set them up for life. I mean,
well, that's the funny thing is because the people that I really consider family are not blood related.
Why?
So, like, you know, my wife and I have talked about it. I was like, you know, it'd be fun. Jump on a plane and surprise Big Jim.
Right.
Just say,
hey, buddy.
What do you need?
Guess what?
Here it is.
Right.
You know.
I've actually even had that thought, too, where it's like, man, if I won the lottery, I'd imagine I'd just call Jim up and be like, hey, by the way, all these people coming by, yeah, they're your lackeys to help you. Whatever you need to get done, do it. Because
see,
you're coming
I've
home.
I've actually talked about it to Bria. It's like, we could hire Jim to work for us. Move him and the family out here. He's going to listen to this and cry. buy him and the
family
a house. Like, they could pick the house, you know, where they want, you know, the school, all that stuff. And we're just, there it is. And now, Jim, for the next year, you work for me. You're at my beck and call. And this is the amount I'm going to pay you.
Right.
You know, and it's enough, more than enough, to sustain him and his wife for several years.
Aye.
You know?
And that was my thing,
too. And
all
he's got to do is show up to do a podcast and maybe occasionally come by to do some other things, some production stuff, you know?
See, and honestly, I had that exact same notion where my dream, my biggest dream was if we won, I was going to buy a decent-sized house and build a studio in it and contract my bandmates to be my employees. I basically would be starting a business and using what money I have to basically kickstart that business. And the business is, you assholes work for me. And that means you will be working with me 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, whether we're recording shit, playing shit, practicing shit, or just fucking hanging out. You work for me. And under a company guise, I would be able to afford giving everybody healthcare. I'd be able to afford, you know, putting money away for them, as well as paying them so they could have a living wage, and then some. And I still would probably never scratch my $100 million buffer. And so it's like, if nothing comes of it, cool. No big deal. We had a great fucking time. Back to the working world, but you still have a shitload of money. You already have a place. You have all these stuff.
Mm.
You can do whatever the fuck you want, but you are set up to where if you did need to rejoin the workforce of, you know, normal people work, you'll still be fine. Financial problems will not be your burden.
Yeah.
And joy, you will have all the fun you can stomach. But yeah, that was my dream, to build a recording studio, and the idea was behind, obviously, for my own self-interest, I was going to offer for the first couple of years that I had the studio to basically have an open door to any local acts. You come in, I will record your first CD. I will record every song you got. I will have it professionally mixed, mastered, produced, all the way through and through, so long as you guys do all the work, show up to work, do the fucking job, and then move on. I will multiply the copies of your album, and I will send it out into the ether, whatever ways I can. At that rate, I'm taking 10% off the top of your sales. Nothing costs you anything out the gate. You come in, you do it, and I'll do all the rest. Take 10% off the top just for my functioning costs. If you want to come back and do a second album, then we'll look into recording, you know, rates. If I really truly believe in the band, probably will be next to nothing, and I'll still take my 10% off the top after the fact. But that was what I wanted to do, so I could actually get new talent in, get them professionally recorded at no cost, and get their name out there, get their CDs out there. They will have to do all the legwork and be their own managers and do their own shows and shit, but the album itself will be done for free, and a professionally graded free. Because at that rate, all you really have to worry about is electricity costs.
Yeah.
After you have all the toys and everything's paid off, it's just electricity bill you got to worry about. And if that album sells at all, in the numbers of, let's say, iTunes picks it up, if you sold 20 albums, 10% off of whatever the take would be off of that would be like probably enough to square your lights for a day.
Any day.
Right. But that was my ultimate dream. But still, it's a ticket to dream, and that's really all it comes down to. I know that Josie and I, if we won any substantial amount of money, we would disappear for a year. And it would basically be just jumping place to place all across the world, and then finally making our way back to our home.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, with that inspirational note, and so kind of depressing because we're still...
I'm sad now because we're broke.
We will see you next week. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.